This is James from SurvivalPunk.com. Back with another episode. Episode number, I don't even know, guys. 185, 186, something like that. I never even say the name. 185. Look at me being right. So yeah, last week I talked about off-grid cooking methods. I even clickbaited the title a little bit to see if I can get a couple more clicks on it. I called it off-grid cooking methods that could save your life. So just imagine that's in what's that guy's name? Brain fog. Yep, can't remember the guy's name. But he's kicked off of Facebook right now for the InfoWars guy, Alex Jones. There we go. Yeah, he, curiously enough, was just kicked off of, like, all of the internet except for his own page, and I'm surprised he's not having issues with his hosting. So, a little conspiratorial there that, you know, in a week, the guy's kicked off of Facebook, YouTube, and several other social media things all at once. I don't even like the guy that much, but it's a little weird. So yeah, last week we talked about off-grid cooking methods. This week, I want to talk about how you can use those off-grid cooking methods to use some of your food storage. And, there'll be no couch potato mic this week. I'm going to talk about how you can use some of the food that you have stored to actually make things with. I tend to talk a lot about how you should store what you eat and you store, and to a degree that works, but then there's, you know, I don't regularly in my everyday life eat freeze-dried chicken, but I store freeze-dried chicken because I like chicken. So, you know, you got to find analogs for things that you eat sometimes. And sometimes there's food that I like to eat that I choose not to eat in my everyday life because I'll just balloon up. I don't eat a lot of carbs generally because I don't process carbs very well, and I will get super fat if I just eat carbs. But during a disaster, I have some carbs stored so that I can eat them or my wife can eat them. You know, it's food, it's calories, and they tend to be cheap. Or, you know, if I got to give away some food, I'll give away a little bag of rice or a little bag of beans, and I won't think twice about it. So, yeah. If you have to finish up the housekeeping, the intro, the housekeeping, if you have questions, concerns, feedback for the show, you can always email me, james@survivalpunk.com. That's my real email address. If it gets caught in the spam filter, I usually check that 2-3 times a week to make sure that nothing gets in there. It's getting better. The spam filter was just snatching up all, like, the emails from real people for a while there, and it was annoying. But it's getting better. Now it mostly catches legit spam and just marketing bullshit. I say marketing bullshit, even though technically I'm an internet marketer. So I don't want you to be, I don't want me going in your spam box, which may have happened since I switched, email providers. It's cheaper. I switched from AWeber, which is the gold standard sort of in email list providing, but you paid a gold standard. So I wanted to save some money, and I moved to one called MailerLite, and it is not as good, but is a third the price. So I'm trying to make it work. A little behind the scenes. I know some of you guys out there want to run websites, want to start internet businesses, want to follow your passions. My buddy Grizz started a website, grizzoutdoors.com, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'll put you in the blog roll when I get a chance. yeah, some of you want to do that. And then, you know, letting you know the behind the scenes, the dirty underbelly of the internet. It's, trust me, there's a dirty underbelly to the internet. But it's a great world, too. It's a great way to make some money and make some friends. Anyway, like I said, you can email me, jamesfarrellpunk.com. If you want to leave a voicemail, cats are being crazy. If you want to leave a voicemail, you can call me at 615-657-9104. Again, that is 615-657-9104. I was actually told recently that I have a great voice for radio, which is wasted. So I don't, I explained that I've just been doing this so long that I've got better. Like if you go back and listen to like the first 10 episodes, one, I'd be surprised if you could make it through the first 10 episodes. If you could make it, it's like a no prize. If you could make it through the first episode without just wanting to pull your hair out and poke your eyes out, then you deserve a no prize, my friends. It is not good. Me and Mike tried several times to get that first episode recorded, and when we did, it was not a work of beauty, but I had... Here's another tip for you guys that want me to start side hustles. I made a rule that the podcast must go out, and it follows the other rule of... perfection is the destroyer of the good. So even if I don't like the podcast, if I don't love it, if I felt my timing was off, I publish it. Which, of course, also, one, makes sure that there's a podcast going out. Two, sort of sets a mental trigger in my head that you better not suck that bad because you're going to publish it. You know, and probably the prime example of that, besides episode number one, was episode 18 with Paul Wheaton. It was our first interview, I believe. Pretty sure it was our first interview. We didn't have recording software. We did not know what we were doing. It was horrible. And you could barely even hear him. I spent 8 hours trying to edit the audio, and it still wasn't good. And I published it anyway, and Paul Wheaton was like, yeah, I can't hear me. So I recorded another episode with Paul Wheaton with software, sounded better, no catch to the mic, but, you know, I didn't break the rule. Both episodes are still up. You can still hear both of them. Anyway, all that just to give you, well, write that down in your entrepreneur books, my friends. The show must go on. So yeah, what are we talking about this week? We're talking about how you can use your food preps. It was hard to do research for this when I was looking stuff up because meal preps has become so prevalent on the internet right now that that's all that popped up. I had a hard time finding anything for using food preps. All I found was meal prep. Pretty annoying, even using Boolean operators and all that fancy schmancy stuff. So I broke it down into several categories of food preps that you could use. Depending on how long this goes, I may break this into a two-part episode. We'll see. I may be able to run through a couple of these pretty fast. So you have frozen foods, dehydrated foods, and even though I'm talking about stuff you can buy online, a lot of this is stuff that you can just dehydrate yourself. Canned foods, which maybe I should have swapped those around, dry storage, home canning, and freeze-dried. I'm not going to include things like MREs in this list. I thought about it. And there are things you can do with MREs to cook, but basically it's a food system. You just eat it, you know. You're not gonna go out of your way and you're not gonna get two of the MRE breads, put a cheese between them, and grill them and make a grilled cheese MRE bread. Probably wouldn't even taste good. And I even like the MRE bread. So yeah, it's It's there. It should be in your preps as a part of it, but you're not going to, you're not really going to take that stuff and make extra stuff with it. It's a complete system, and that's the way it's designed for. So first up is frozen foods. If you have proper freezer space, and many of you do, then this is going to be the easiest, probably the one of the easiest, simplest ways to store foods, and cheapest. And that's just freezing your meats, freezing, you know, veggies, freezer made foods already. I've done stuff like one, a friend of mine one time had a huge harvest of jalapenos. And they're like, oh, James likes jalapenos. So they gave me a huge Kroger sack full of jalapenos. And I knew I couldn't use them all in a relatively short time. So I took some of them to dehydrate. And because that's going to be a different sort of flavor profile. You can do different things with dehydrated things. And the rest of them I sort of processed. So, you know, you cut the stem off, you split them down the middle, you take the membrane and the seeds out. And then when you do that to all of them or enough of them, put them on a cookie sheet. Or put a batch on the cookie sheet, put it in your freezer flat, let it sit there for 30, 40 minutes, an hour. You want them to be frozen solid, not touching each other. If you just take them and throw them in a Ziploc bag, throw them in the freezer, they're going to freeze together. They're going to freeze poorly. You're not going to have a good result there. Take them on a cookie sheet, not let them touch each other, freeze them. When they're completely frozen, take them out. Throw them in a Ziploc bag. Ziploc it. If you have a food saver, more power to you. My food saver died, so I can't even sous vide things right now. It's annoying. But I only paid like $3 for it, so whatever. I'll just buy another $3 one when I find one. So yeah, that, you know, and then you can do that with a lot of things. You can do that same method of processing, however you process them. Some things you get, you're going to need to be parboiled, which is just basically dip them in boiling water for like 30 seconds, pull them out, put them in like ice cold bath, let them drain, do it that way. And some of the things you're going to dehydrate will need to be parboiled too. You have to look up instructions on specific things to know what you need to parboil and what you don't. But a hint is if you buy frozen things from the frozen food section of your local store, if they need to be parboiled to be frozen or dehydrated, they'll already be parboiled. So things like, potatoes to dehydrate them, you need to parboil them. To freeze them, they need to parboil them. So you can get frozen potatoes, frozen carrots and stuff from the grocery store, put them on your dehydrator and dehydrate them. So you've moved them from freezer storage to your dry, dehydrated storage. So you're not using up, you know, space that way. And, you know, say in an emergency, if you can run your dehydrator or you have a solar dehydrator, you can take certain things out of the freezer to dehydrate them for long-term storage without power. But yeah, the freezer is going to be the easy storage method for many of you. I don't have a lot of freezer space. But I could be packing out a bit more. So yeah, and the freezer tends to be like the first place you're going to pull from in an emergency, because that's the stuff that's going to go bad. So it's your easy first stock and it's your easy first pull, you know. And if you get a pull and start dehydrating stuff, if you get a fire up the grill that we talked about last week in the food off-grid cooking methods and start growing up all your meats and your foods and stuff, you know, that's what you got to do. And then maybe you take some of that meat and you smoke it or you dehydrate it. Or, you know, you have a work party and you feed people pretty good on that fresh meat so it doesn't go bad. You know, I'd much rather, you know, invite people over and be like, I got some steaks. You want to help me pick up the yard, as opposed to throwing away rancid meat because I couldn't get to it. Just saying. I've heard before that it's good to stockpile like a case of beer. Like if you have like something you need to get done a lot of times a case of beer goes a long way. Like, oh, can you help me get this tree out of the road? You know, I'll throw you a case of beer. And it does go a long way, but beer doesn't last very long. I'm an alcoholic, can't keep beer in the house. But yeah, that's an extra bonus tip for you. You know, and I'm sure if you're Jeff Radke, you've got like 37 cases of beer stockpiled anyway, just in case you can't make it for a beer run. So you're good. I'm pretty sure we've knocked out the frozen things. Before what I've liked to do as well is, if you make a chicken broth, you know, you take your, you eat chicken, and then you take the bones and you turn that into chicken stock, pour that chicken stock into ice cubes, freeze the ice cubes, and then pop them out and throw them in little baggies, and you have basically bouillon cubes that don't have tons of chemicals and bullshit in them. So that's another one. But like I said, if the freezer goes down, those are going to start to melt and go bad pretty quick. So you'd want to use them fairly soon after as well. I should include a link to this. The only way I know to store something like that with our methods, like, because we can't make bouillon cubes at home, but we can make like 17th century portable soup, which is where you take your stock and you kind of keep cooking it and keep cooking it and keep an eye on it until it becomes basically a hard gel. And then that you can put in soups and stews and rehydrate it and use that as a bouillon cube. And I will absolutely put a link in the show notes to portable soup. The John Townsend's, they put up a video on that, on how to do it. So I'm right now adding a link. So yeah, that would be a way to take that freezer storage once again and transport it to dry storage. But like I said, when you the freezer tends to be the easiest way to start out. And then from there, we go into sort of more work. And let's see. Next up, we've got the dehydrated foods list. Probably should have been canned foods. I tried to arrange this list in sort of ease and priority. So, you know, like the last on the list, I've got freeze-dried foods. That's going to be your longest lasting, but your most expensive and sort of your least practical. You're not really going to use them day to day. They're going to be, you know, your insurance foods. Whereas, you know, canned foods, that can be daily foods. So dehydrated foods. This is both the stuff that you make and the stuff that you can buy. There's a lot of dehydrated foods. There's a lot of stores. Can't think of any of the names right now, but they sell already dehydrated random things like, you know, veggies, fruits, stuff like that. And they tend to, the stuff you can get online will be more pure than a lot of stuff in the stores. They add a lot of extra ingredients, sugars and stuff. I'm talking about just plain dehydrated ingredients in most of these cases. Like, You can dehydrate the jalapenos, like I said, and they're good for rehydrating in soups and stews. Most of these things will tend to be for soups and stews. A lot of the stuff you're going to dehydrate never really rehydrates to being its original form. You know, you dehydrate cauliflower, it turns into like brown little knobs. I mean, it goes from being that white, you know, that pure white color of cauliflower to being like just sort of a brownish yellow little ball. It doesn't look appealing at all. It never really rehydrates to like a cauliflower florette. But you can, if you want to like boil it in water until it's soft and then make a sort of rehydrated mashed cauliflower out of it, you know, you add some butter and stuff, it's going to work fine for that. If you want to like, if you're thinking about rehydrating it and putting it on like a fruit tray, like a veggie tray to dip in like ranch dressing, it's never going to do that again. But if you want to, you know, just you add it in a long soup or a long stew that you're going to boil for hours and get those extra nutrients, those, you know, extra flavor in some cases, like a thickening agent, then it's going to work for that. It's going to work fine for that. And that's what most of this dehydrated fruits will do. Like, you can go buy the tiny diced frozen potatoes from the frozen food section. Throw them on a dehydrator. They get really tiny. I mean, they'll get minuscule. Put them in a mason jar, throw an O2 absorber in there if you're feeling frisky. And then, you know, can it up. And then you can make, you know, rehydrated potato soup with that. And if you get some, if you have freeze-dried cheese in your long-term storage or canned cheese, you can make a cheddar cheese soup. Get fancy with it. But yeah, most of this stuff, it's going to take a long time to cook, and it's going to really lend itself to soup, stews, and casseroles. I saw that while doing research for this show. I'd never thought about it, but a lot of the stuff, you know, you just layer in your ingredients, you put it in the oven or solar cooker or whatever, and just let it go for hours, and it's going to work really well for that. You'll lose the texture in most of these cases, but for things like casseroles and stuff, it's usually just a mush mess anyway, so it'll work fine. So yeah, that's what that's for. Next up on the dehydrator list, I have jerkies. So, I mean, I'm sure anyone that's got a food dehydrator at some point has made jerky. Like, I remember the 1990 Ron Popeil infomercials, about all the stuff you can make, and jerky's a selling point. Like, jerky's expensive. Jerky's delicious. Everyone loves jerky. And if you're like me, if you're sort of a weird hippie, sort of Nazi about what you eat, a lot of the jerky you can get in the store either has really, really just junk shit chemicals in it, or if it doesn't, it's expensive. Like, jerky is expensive anyway, but if you want good quality jerky, your price just like doubles and goes through the roof. So if you want like GMO free, grass fed, organic, you know, jerky, you know, that's your whole paycheck. You're just, I mean, not literally, but you know, it's a lot of money. Dehydrating, you can make your own jerky. You can control the flavor completely. You can control everything you put in there. Master your own ingredients. So, me and Serenity have made jerky twice, I think. And both times the jerky turned out great. I think the first time we let it run a little long, get a little too crispy. You gotta keep your eye on it. I used to just dehydrate overnight and wake up and turn it off. That tends to be too long in most cases. So now I'd rather do it while I'm awake during the daytime when I'm gonna be home. So not only can I turn it off in an appropriate, like, 4-hour time, not an 8-hour time, because I don't have an Excalibur dehydrator. I can't control the temperature exactly. I've got a cheap, like, I think a Oster, Walmart brand, basically, the Oster, Oyster. I've got that. So not only do I want to turn it off within 3-4 hours, but I want to sort of keep an eye on the meat. I want to see how it's dehydrating. I want to arrange it so that the thicker cuts are on the bottom more, and the thinner cuts are on the top, so they'll receive a little bit less of the heat and a little less airflow. And I rotate the trays a few times, you know, so that they're hitting different spots. And then towards the end, I end up manually moving around the slices so that the ones that still need more love are on the bottom, and the ones that need less are on the top. And a good thing about making your own jerky is you don't really have to take it to that, like, next level long-term storage. You can have jerky that's still a little moist and tender on the inside, and that's good. That's so good. You know, like a FDA warning, I'm not a food scientist, I can't advise you to eat blah, 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 blah. But if you're making your own jerky, you don't have to take it to, like, leather, you know, state. You can have it still be tender and delicious, guys. Delicious. So, and if you do not have a dehydrator, You could always just set your oven on warm, crack the door open, throw them straight on the grate, put a tray below it to catch drippings, you know, and just keep your eye on it. But, you know, you can drop $200 on an Excalibur dehydrator, and if you really use it, you won't regret it a day in your life. Or you can go out and spend like $20-$30 on a cheap dehydrator and just start making stuff now. So you either, I mean, if you want to get your feet wet, just start dehydrating the oven. I did that. And then eventually I bought my dehydrator. I've had it for several years and I've dehydrated a lot on it. Like I said, I can't control the temperature and I can't set timers, but it does its job. You know, it has one job to do. You turn it on, it dehydrates, and it does that. So, I'm not angry about it. Lastly, you know what? To touch on it, I know Jack Spirko is real big on biltong. And I know one time he was like, you can't make biltong in a dehydrator. And he tried it one time, and he said it's not good. So, don't try. I've made biltong. I just sort of hung it up on a string in my room, and it was good. So, I've only made it once. I've been thinking about making some again. One, I have cats right now, and one of them is an asshole and probably try to steal it. Two, I bet my wife would freak out if I had strips of meat hanging up on a string in the house. So, I'm not a big fan of the biltong boxes, but I might have to build one just so the cats don't eat them, and so that Serenity is like, oh, okay, that makes more sense. You've got a biltong box to make biltong, not like a string of fishing line across the living room with strips of meat hanging down. I don't think she'd appreciate that. But yeah, moving on to fruit. That's another thing that I've done in the dehydrator quite often. Besides just, you know, like, we started out talking about dehydrating sort of veggies, went to meat. So fruit, for some reason, like, it never clicked in my head growing up until I did this, that, you know, you have a dehydrator, you get a package of grapes, you throw them on there, you come back several hours later, you've got raisins now. They last a long time, they won't mold, and I like raisins. I mean, it's just easy, and, you know, once again, you go to the store sometimes, you buy a package of raisins, the ingredients should be, you know, sun-dried, sun-ripened, dehydrated grapes, and you find other ingredients on it. You know, you don't need anything. You need grapes, and you need the moisture removed. That's it. So, you make your own raisins at home, you know there's only one ingredient, grapes, that have had most of their moisture removed. And generally unless you go to like a crazy health food store, you're not going to find a variety of grapes. You're going to find mostly dehydrated red grapes of one variety. You may find some golden raisins, which are green grapes that have been dehydrated. You won't find any like crazy varieties of grapes though. And when you make your own raisins, you can do that. You know, and any of the dehydrated foods you find in store usually have added sugar, added preservatives, you know. You got bananas starting to go bad, chop them up, throw them in the dehydrator, make banana chips. People like those. I've really enjoyed, like, I dehydrated apple slices, and especially green apples. I'm a fan of green apples, and that sour sort of tartness gets really concentrated when you make like apple leather. So I've never used it, but I have the flat non like vented attachment for the dehydrator, so I can make like fruit roll-ups. I've never used it. Well, I've never used it for that. I tried an experiment one time. Was a horrendous failure. Would not recommend it. I was like, cauliflower is a good analog for potatoes, mashed potatoes, to make really good mashed potatoes. So I made a cauliflower mashed potatoes, no butter, no seasonings. I made, left them pretty plain, made them into like little chip shapes, dehydrated them with some sour cream and onion powder on them, thinking I'm going to make sour cream and onion potato chips out of cauliflower. They were disappointing. Cauliflower is, it just wants to suck in water. Like, I eventually got them pretty crispy in a way, but they're only crispy really right when you take them off. If you let them sit in the atmosphere, then they just suck back in water. You got to store them completely devoid of oxygen, and it was a lot of work for not even an amazing result, so I wouldn't recommend it. Possibly, though, and what I'm thinking I might try very soon is making mashed cauliflower, no butter, no real seasonings, completely just make it plain, and then spread that out, dehydrate it, put it in a food processor, turn that into a fine powder, and then store that. So you kind of basically have instant mashed cauliflower, which is something I've not been able to find, but I've not looked for it super recently either. So, and that's going to be an experiment I'm going to try, actually. I'm definitely going to try that. Back to fruit, though. So apple, I like really well. Making my own raisins, I liked. Bananas. What else is really good? I've tried... Oh, see, when I was talking about raisins, you can't... So, I like blueberries, too. You can see that I don't really like... I'm peculiar about the fruits I like. And you can just throw a bag, a whole bunch of blueberries on your dehydrator, dehydrate them, and you make little... They're like raisins. Some of them get kind of crispy, and they have that intense blueberry flavor. I really like that. So, and it's, you know, it's, you can do stuff with them. Like, what was it? Just last week before, recently, what we've been doing is on cheat day morning, I've been making some oatmeal and throwing in some freeze-dried fruit. You can use dehydrated fruit. It would work just as well. But I have freeze-dried fruit from Valley Food Storage. And, you know, you throw in 3/4 cup of freeze-dried strawberries, let it cook in there with it, let it rehydrate with those liquids, form like a strawberry sauce, and you get a good flavor. Like, it turns out really well. I've done that same thing with some like freeze-dried raspberries. You know, I've not tried dehydrating peaches, but I probably will. And that's until... later on when we talk about canning, I'm going to talk about maybe trying some peach preserves this year. My wife loves peaches and she wants to can, and I fully support that. So fruit, I think we've beat fruit dead. Like I said, I'm not a big fruit guy. It's not my thing. So, but those are a couple of the fruits that I've tried. Just give the fruits that you try a try. Not a like. You've already liked them. Probably liked them on Facebook. Nimbus, the cat, is being crazy down here. You know what? I thought about setting up the camera to record podcasts so you could watch me talk into midair. And, you know, maybe some people will dig that. Who knows? But right now, you'd be seeing me play with Nimbus. Which I'm sure PETA would be like, oh, you're being too rough. He's a wildcat. Anyway, take the fruits that you like and throw on the dehydrator. Let them go. Find out, one, what your preferred level of dryness is. So like I said, I've dehydrated blueberries until they're basically a little on the crunchy side. They're still a little... chewy, but mostly they're crunchy, and that's what I liked. And like I said with jerky, I like to let it go a little under so it's still fairly tender and not that store brand rough tumble leathery consistency. And I usually will just store mine in the fridge, but you know, you can store them with O2 absorbers in a mason jar and it'll be fine. Or you can take it as far as you can and have, like, you know, super, super dry, tough meat, and then you can rehydrate that in soup stews and use it that way. It will last longer that way, but it will be less tasty to eat it as it is. So, next up is canned foods. You know, using methods like copy canning, eating the foods that you already eat, storing the foods that you already eat, is the way to go here. I got an email. What is this? Nope. Dumb email. Sorry. I wish it could have been like an annoying email so I could have read it to you. I get a bunch of those crazy shits. But, so yeah. What I've been thinking about doing recently is I don't really eat a lot of canned foods. I eat a lot of fresh foods, and I'm trying to get the canned versions of those foods so that, one, I can store them, build up my food storage. Nimbus, get out of here. And do it that way. And, I mean, I'm pretty sure everyone here has heard multiple times, but I'll reiterate it about copy canning. So once a week, you eat a can of, what do I like? I eat a can of mustard greens. I like mustard greens. I like to drain most of the water out, replace that water content with butter, and give it a healthy dash of hot sauce, Louisiana. And that's how I like my mustard greens, especially from the can. If I'm getting it, you know, like fresh mustard greens, once again, pot, butter, salt, pepper, hot sauce. That's what I like. Nothing too fancy there. So once a week, say I eat a can of mustard greens. This week I go to the store to do my grocery shopping. I buy two cans. Next week I go to the store. I have one can at home because I ate one can and it was delicious. Thank you very much. So I still have a can. I don't technically need another can, but I buy two cans. I go back to the pantry. I put in my two cans. It comes to be mustard green night. I cook my mustard greens and we get two cans left. You keep doing this. Keep doing this until you're satisfied with that. And, you know, say mustard greens, the last time I bought them 2 weeks ago was 50 cents a can for the off brand, generic Walmart brand. You spend an extra dollar, you spend an extra 50 cents per week buying one extra can of whatever you're eating. You don't notice it. I mean, 50 cents, I could walk around and pick up 50 cents, like, in the street. You don't notice it. And then you do this for 6 weeks, you've got six extra cans. So at that point, you can kind of move on to something else. You can say, oh, my wife likes canned peaches. She eats a can of peaches a week. She doesn't, but if she did, it would be applicable. Maybe she will. So, you know, I buy two cans, and then you keep doing that. Next thing you know, you've got a packed-ass pantry, and, you know, small disaster hits, you've got a full pantry of your cans. So it works for pretty much anything that will store in your pantry. Say your kids like pancakes, you go buy a box of, you know, Hungry Jack pancake mix, you buy two boxes, you're still only out like $1.50 or something more. Next time you go to buy another box, you buy two more boxes, you fill up your pantry with that. You know, disaster happens, you know, something like, I don't know, power goes out, you're snowstormed in, you can't get to the store, you can make pancakes, your kids will like it. I've been on an oatmeal cake recently, so do the same thing with that. But yeah, that's the copy canning method. You just buy, you know, and it's, preppers are made to be pretty fucking crazy on the media, but buying one extra of whatever it is that you consume often and having a backup doesn't seem that crazy to me. You know, it's certainly better than running to the store, or if you can't make it to the store for like 2 or 3 days, being, you know, fucked. You know, as it is now, I may be out of the food that I really like, but I have food to eat. So we've really covered fruits and veggies. So the advantage, especially when we tie it back to the off-grid cooking with these canned foods, is they almost always come packed in liquid. Veggies, fruit, they come packed in liquid. So you don't need to add extra liquid if you're making something, and you can count on that being potable water in these cases. A lot of times the fruits will be stored in a heavy syrup, a syrup of some sort, you know. So you can use that to your advantage. Like, you know, off-grid cooking, you know, power goes out or something. Use one of our off-grid cooking methods. Take a can of peaches, you pour it in there, you take your stored box of Bisquick, you mix that with water, you throw it on top, you bake that, you have a, you know, you have a, you've made a peach cobbler from your food stores. And, you know, how would your family feel, you know, if it's a disaster, you know, something's going on? I'm not even talking about like major large scale disaster. You know, snowstorm outside, can't make it to the store, you know, people are being crazy. Here's a fucking peach cobbler, you know, awesome. So yeah, you know, and you in that case, you would use the liquid that it's packed in as well. And to make my wife happy, you'd throw in a smattering of butter, because she says peach cobbler can't be made without butter. Can't be. I made it one time, and she's kept the whole time eating it going, this is good, but it's missing something. Did you put butter in there? Is there any butter in there? Did you put butter in there? No, I didn't. I didn't put butter in there. The recipe didn't call for it. So anyway, meats. And unfortunately, since Catch Show Mike did not get to be on this episode, because of scheduling conflicts, and I waited for him all one morning and he slept in, and then he woke up and was like, let's go eat Mexican food. Anyway, he's been on a huge spam kick recently and has a whole bunch of spam recipes, and I was going to have him read a spam recipe for this, for the meat section, but spam is a canned meat. Doesn't necessarily belong in all of your preps, but spam is not bad. I did a whole article on it years ago on why, you know, like, spam is sort of bastardized. And it's only got 6 ingredients, and those are just like, one of those is salt. Throw that off, it's got 5 ingredients, you know. Pork shoulder, pork this, you know, it's spices. It's, you know, it's not like GMO, make-believe, hoogly-boogly. It's pig in a can. And I don't mind spam. I especially like it cut into slices and fried until it has a crispy outer layer. That's how I like my spam. And I've been mentally working on a spam pineapple Hawaiian taco mental recipe for my wife. She likes pineapple. She was like, spam tacos would be horrible. And I'm like, I bet I can make a tropical taco that you would like. Maybe even some, like, I think that would deserve a slaw. Like, maybe a coleslaw with the pineapple juice and some of the pineapples cooked in the ham with it, so that they get that caramelization. I think that would be delicious. I also like the, you know what, I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but they are fairly good sized cans of meat you can get at the store. They have turkey, pork, beef. And I remember for a while when I started prepping, you just couldn't find like canned beef. Corned beef, you can find, and stuff like that, but you couldn't find just plain beef. And amazingly, now you can. So that takes care of that. So definitely think that these belong in your food storage. On the short term, you know, they have a year or two lifespans on them before they're technically expired. And that, you know, they're not going to last forever, but during a short term emergency, if you want to like use one of those cans of that to make a meal, well, it works fine. You know, you're not going to make delicious food out of that, but you can definitely make some hearty food. So you take a can of that canned beef and you put that in a pot, and then you add some of your freeze-dried potatoes, not freeze-dried, just dehydrated potatoes in there, and maybe some veggies. You know, they cook for a long time and you've got a soup. When we get to dry beans, you know, you can take that can, add that with some beans. Even though I don't really like beans and chili, but you can make chili just using your off-grid stuff. Like, I remember one year, I realized it was, I think it was New Year's Eve, and I was sitting at home by myself, and I was like, I really want a good New Year's Eve dinner. So I went to my preps, and I had, like, one of those DAC cans of ham. I had, like, a can of black-eyed peas. You know, I had some of those packets of instant mashed potatoes and a can of corn all in my prep. So I just made a big meal. I think I made a biscuit out of like some dehydrated stuff, like a one single biscuit, you know, and I made this huge spread of New Year's Eve food just for my food preps. And, you know, was it as good as like mom's home cooking? Well, no, but it was pretty tasty. So next up, I've got meals, and a lot of times you can find canned, sort of complete meals. So you don't have to cook anything. You can just sort of reheat these and let them go. These will be things like chili, chicken and dumplings, chicken a la king. What else have I really seen? The vegetarian things, they have quite a few of them, like succotash. So you can find a lot of these basically complete meals in a can. And I don't mean like hamburger in a can. Nobody wants hamburger in a can. I'm just waiting for one of you guys to find a hamburger in a can and send me and force me to do a YouTube video so I can eat that nasty gray meat and more than likely throw up. I'm a very professional throw upper, and I will throw up fairly easily. Only at disgusting, like, not even like for reason. I don't have a weak stomach. Like, I just can throw up easily. Others. Okay, so I went down the list of canned foods. So you had veggies, fruit, meats, complete meals, and then I had a list for canned others. And by others, I mean, and for complete meals, I meant like, you can get soups too, like, you know, the hearty, chunky soups, things like that, which you can pretty much count as a complete meal. You don't need anything else to it. But others, I mean things like broths, chicken broths, beef broths. They have especially here in the South, I don't know about you Northerners, but they have like canned white gravy, so you could make from your preps like sausage, because they have canned sausage. You know, you can make biscuits and gravy. So it's not the best gravy ever, but it'll do the trick. It'll get you through. So yeah, that's what I mean by others. Canned sort of sauce. Excuse me. You know, canned gravies, canned sauces, things that you can take and really sort of spice up your meal. Like some of these dehydrated meals will tend to be pretty bland, pretty boring. Like, say, something you can do, and I really wanted to go into more recipes with this, but I'm trying to get you to think about how you can take your food storage and kick it up a notch, amplify it, so it's not boring. Like, you can take the same the same like three or four ingredients, change up your spices and whatnot, and make a plethora of things. So you can take your canned Spam and you could sort of lightly batter and fry it, and then take your white gravy and smother that on it, and then take your biscuits and make a biscuit and gravy out of that. So, you know, there's a, having these extra sort of condiments like that, these extra accoutrements will sort of amplify it, you know. Here in the South, man, we'll put white gravy on everything. I mean, white gravy is just like, there used to be a restaurant here in Tennessee when I was young, and I loved it. It was called Mrs. Winter's Chicken. And somehow they closed down. They couldn't make money. I don't understand it. But they literally had the best white gravy ever. And every time that me and my younger brother Christopher would go there, we would make our order, and then we'd make an order for an extra bowl of the white gravy so that we had extra to like dip our things in. It's good. And I've heard rumors they're coming back to Tennessee, and I can't wait. Love their food. Next up, we've got dry storage. How are we doing on time? You know what? This very well may be a two-part episode or a long one. I'll try to go through. Dry storage is sort of no-brainers. It's going to be your dry things that you're going to store. Rice, beans, pasta. Things like that. I would include in like your Bisquick, your pancake mix, your flour, your wheat, all that stuff would go into dry storage. Rice, beans, pasta. So, you know, you store a variety. Store what you like. If you hate pinto beans, don't store massive amounts of pinto beans. I've got several varieties of different kinds of beans. I like a lot of different beans. You know what I don't have in my bean storage? I don't have lima beans. I don't really hate lima beans, but I don't love them either. You know, I like black beans, so I have some black beans in my storage. There's so much variety too. Like when I say rice, most people are just thinking white grain rice. It stores the longest because it doesn't have anything, you know, it's been stripped of everything. It's basically pure carbohydrate, calories and whatnot. So you don't necessarily have to just store the plain varieties, and I don't think you should. You know, store a bag or two of basmati rice, store some jasmine rice, you know, store some, oh my God, Uncle Ben's wild rice. Love that stuff. You know, it doesn't last as long, but through rotating, through using your food stores, which you should, then it'll stay fresh and stay up to date. It won't last. You know, you put a bag of just plain white rice in a 5-gallon bucket, it'll last for 75 million years. You know, Uncle Ben's wild rice won't. But if you're using it, you know, it doesn't matter. Like I said, you know, don't just store like spaghetti, store, you know, lasagna, store different kinds of noodles, store the pasta that you like to use. You know, like to me, basically it's all just flavor transporters and it doesn't really matter what it is, but some people do. Chef Show Mike will not eat spaghetti if it's thin spaghetti. He won't. It will go to waste. I have no idea why. To me, it's all just spaghetti. It's just little white things that transport the sauce to your mouth and take up space. So it doesn't matter to me. But him and his family hate thin spaghetti. They will eat the minimum amount that they have to not die, and it'll get wasted. So, you know, that's something to sort of decipher and find out now. Like, store what you like and what you will eat and what your family will eat. You know, if I say just go store beans and rice and you go back buy a big bag of pinto beans and a big bag of white rice and it turns out you hate them, you know what? You'll probably eat them before you starve to death and die. probably, but you're not going to really learn to use them, and you're not going to want to use them, is what I'm saying. So you may not be excited about your food storage in general, but it should be food that you will eat. I'm not going to store in my freezer liver. I know I'm not going to eat it. I've tried, and I've not found a way that I can tolerate liver yet. So I'm just not going to store it, even though I know it's good for me. Next up is home canning. So home canning, of course, has two categories, really. Water bath canning for your, I believe it's your, correct, I'm not a canning expert, and I probably need to have one on the show. It's either low acid or high acid. I think it's high acid foods can be water bath. Low acid foods cannot be water bath and must be pressure canned. I have canned stuff, but it's not often, and I very strictly follow the recipes and the guidelines. So, and you know when you're very strictly following something sometimes, like map directions, you don't actually have any idea what you're doing. You're just following one step at a time. Do this. Gotcha. Do this. Gotcha. What did you do 2 things ago? No idea. Let me go look. So, so that water bath canning, you're gonna can things like your green beans and stuff, I believe. Like, I don't know. And there's the things that you can can with that. And then pressure canning, you're gonna can things like meat and complete meals that are, once again, I believe, low in acidity or high. I don't know. So yeah, I've pressure canned ground beef before, and I used it in making chili. So you get to making your chili. It said add 2 pounds of ground beef. I grab a big can, big jar, big can jar that I made of ground beef, pour it in there, and that chili was amazing. Could I tell that it was, 6-month-old beef that I canned myself? Nope. Just tasted like good chili to me. So that's, and something that I think I've talked about, I'm not sure, but I'm gonna start canning more sort of complete meals here at home. So I have my wife make a big batch of her spaghetti sauce, which I've said is the best spaghetti that you'll ever get. And, can up a big batch of that so that, cold winter, we're struggling to find something to eat. Just get some of that, warm it up, make some pasta sauce, get some spaghetti squash, pour it on there. You're good to go. And really sort of get more into canning. Like I said earlier with the peaches, my wife wants to start learning to can. I want to get the canner back out again. So I'm thinking find a good recipe for like peach preserves and then can that up. I'm pretty damn sure you can can complete things. Like, you could can a peach cobbler that'll make in the can. Like, you put your stuff in there, you have it there, and then you can it, and then basically you've got a canned peach cobbler ready to be eaten at any time that you choose to eat it. So I want to do more things like that. That's not just like canned individual ingredients, but like canned meals. Although I do really like, I got the pressure canner to be able to can meat, and that's what I really like about it. So, to have all that meat for long-term storage. Let's see. Last up, so I'm not gonna break this episode in two parts. It'll go past an hour a little bit, but that's more audio enjoyment for you guys. Last up, I've got your freeze-dried foods. And I want to, before I get into this, really, I want to talk about Valley Food Storage. They've been a supporter of the show for a while now. They've sent me things to review. Got to get some of those reviews out still. But they've got a sale on their Valley Food Storage month-long gluten-free stuff. here at the show, me, I don't really like gluten. I don't think it needs to be in your life much or any. And 1 month supply gluten-free kit, $164.99, on sale from $224.94. You get 100 servings of delicious food that's gluten-free, 12 pounds. Resealable packaging, that's something I like about theirs. That, you know, you can take out what you need and then reseal it. Yeah, it's going to shorten the lifespan once you open it and reseal it. But once you're using it, it's, you know, you're not going to have it. You're not going to try to store it for 25 years after you've opened it. You're going to use it fairly soon. So it's good for that. It is good for 25 years unopened. Convenient, just add water meals. No MSGs, no GMO, no fillers or drink mix. All natural ingredients. And for that, you get, breakfast. You get gluten-free buttermilk pancakes, 10 servings, strawberry oatmeal, 10 servings, apple oatmeal, 10 servings, maple and brown sugar oatmeal, 10 servings, lunch and dinner, sweet and sour Asian rice, 10 servings, Irish pub cheddar potato soup, 10 servings, chicken teriyaki, 10 servings, Thai coconut curry. And I'm trying to get some of the Thai coconut curry to review. I love a good coconut curry. And I love a good curry. But I really want to try this. And if it's good, then I'm going to add that to my preps for sure. Enchilada beans and rice. Which I know for a fact is good. Because I cooked some a couple weeks ago. So their enchilada beans and rice are delicious. Even Skyler went back, ate like two bowls of enchilada beans and rice in one go. And there's 10 servings of that. And, oh my God. So we made the one bag of the enchilada beans and rice. And it fed us for like 2 days. Like, it was a huge amount of food. Tomato basil soup, 10 servings. So everything I've had from Valley Food Storage has been amazing. They had a sister company with some like keto baking mixes that were not the best things I've ever eaten, but all of their freeze-dried fruits, all of their meals I've tried, everything has been top quality, amazing. So consider, if you know, at least I highly recommend you go try the enchilada beans and rice. Go order some of that. So back to the show. So you have basically, I think of freeze dried foods as, camping meals and number 10 cans. You can get them in different sizes, but number 10 cans is sort of your gold standard, really where you really want to be. And a lot of them aren't that expensive. So especially for the small, like you can get a number 10 can of like broccoli for $13 or something. So why not? So yeah, camping meals, things like Mountain House. Like I've got a breakfast skillet, which is like eggs, potatoes and stuff I need to try soon. You know, all of those camping meals you can get come in little packets, usually add 2 cups of water, let it sit for a couple of minutes, stir it up, eat it, enjoy. You know, and they're just good. They're just good, like quick meals. Keep a couple in your go bags. You know, keep a couple around the house. Sometimes, you know, it's fun to have like freeze dry, like hiking meal days, like where you get some out and you try them as family and you're like, oh, so that's what that tastes like. So that, you know, it's fun now. And then when you have to use those in an emergency, you know, it's just like, oh, remember when we eat these? Like, it's just fun, you know, like it's not like, oh, it's a disaster. We have to eat this weird food. Like, and you get to learn sort of which ones you like, you know. So in emergency, I know if I pull out some enchilada beans and rice, family's going to like that. It's going to be edible. So, you know, and oh my, I can speak from experience, and I need to get some more. That the Mountain House biscuits and gravy is delicious. It's Southerner approved. So, camping meals, they definitely have a part in your stores and, more often, you know, say once a month you try, you try some hiking meals, you know, and that way you're not just storing them, you're trying them, you know what they taste like, and, you know, some of them aren't good and they don't belong in your stores. Like, you try one, and if you hate it, then you don't store that one, you know. The Mountain House chicken and rice is good. I've tried that. I don't know if I've came across one that I don't really love. I'm not a very picky eater, though, guys. So, but some of them don't look appealing, and I just don't buy those. But I really want to try curry. you know, and speaking of camping meals, if you're also peculiar like me, the Paleo Meals to Go, all the ones I've tried from them have been delicious. So, especially, I think it was the Mountain Stew, the Cave Mountain Stew. They changed the name, I think. But it was great. Highly recommend them. I'll have a link in the show notes. And then, lastly, your number 10 cans. You can get number 10 cans of Complete Meals. But what I think of most for the number 10 cans is ingredients to make meals. And most of these, like I said, is you're gonna make like soups and stews. I've heard Mountain House has some pork chops that you can rehydrate and grill up. Might be okay. I would think they'd be better like covered in like barbecue sauce and eaten that way, where you're used to like your like TV dinner barbecue sauce like patty of whatever mystery meat is. But, you know, most of these things, like, being sort of paleo keto, you know, people are like, oh, what can you eat? Long-term food storage. And it's, you know, meat and veggies. So, you know, I have cans of like broccoli, cauliflower, chicken, beef, you know, things like that. And, you know, I make soups and stews out of them, rehydrate them that way. I don't even, you know, it's, what do you eat anyway? Meat and veggies. What do you store? Freeze-dried meat and veggies. Canned meat and veggies. You know, it's the same thing here. So, yeah, that's, you know, if I look down there, it's... I also have a number 10 can of, like, egg powder, which you kind of can make a sort of a scrambled egg substitute with it, but you can use it in baking and some other stuff like that, like put it in a soup and stew to sort of thicken it up, get some extra protein in it that way. But yeah, you know, it's stuff to make soups and stews with mostly is what I focus with my freeze-dried stuff. So I have like, you know, dehydrated celery. Celery's not really good, doesn't have a lot of calories, but if you cook it in a soup, it's good for that. You know, it's that's what its purpose is. Celery was made to just become like cooked in stew and add its flavor to it that way. It's eating celery stalks is pretty disgusting. It's stringy, it's chewy, I don't like the flavor, hate it. So that's what I think about how to use your food storage, guys. Like I said, it went long, but I think you deserve a couple extra minutes of showtime, especially as opposed to like cutting the episode off and making a two-parter that just wouldn't have been as good. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up the episode. Make sure you check out Valley Food Storage. I'll have a link in the show notes. They have great food. They've been a good supporter of the show. So check those guys out. Check out Paleo Meals to Go. And DIY to use your food prep, you guys.